Good morning. This is Matt Winters, editor and publisher of the Chinook Observer in Long Beach and the Coast River Business Journal in Clatsop and Pacific Counties, here after deadline this morning on KMUN. And I'm very pleased to have with us this morning as guests Peter Bricks, who's a legendary figure on the Lower Columbia River and elsewhere, and his collaborator in a series of historical volumes, Beverly Warren Lee, who's been working with Peter for three years now?
Mm-hmm.
Very intensely on compiling a whole wonderful archive of material relating to the Bricks family's activities, both in terms of maritime operations on the river and a great deal of timber land commerce industry here, both in our two counties and further on upriver as well. Bricks is just a name to really conjure with when it comes to both those industries. I've come across Bricks a number of times in the past, most recently, I think, with regard to the wonderful sort of anecdotal history project that the Apollo Archive Center did last year, in which a good number of the old logging families spoke of their affection and experiences with Bricks logging, particularly in western Wicayacum County, but kind of all over the place. So thanks so much to both Peter and Bev for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Peter, you're here as we're recording this show for a sort of meet and greet and autograph session at Columbia River Maritime Museum, with which you've also had a long affiliation as a board member, one of really the founders of the thing, in connection with a lot of other prominent people here in Astoria. So what was it like growing up as a Bricks? I've wondered since I've been reading your books, did you secretly aspire to be a trapeze artist all along, but you acquiesced into the family industry, or, you know, were you always excited about it?
I was involved as a young boy, observing some of the logging and forest product side of the business, but I didn't think of it as a business I would go into, as it was struggling at following the Depression, and the family had largely gone out of that business. My dad started working at Napton Towboat Company following the death of my grandfather, P.J. Bricks, and so I knew about and heard a lot about Napton Towboat Company, and my dad died prematurely in 1960. So I was in law school at that time and had law school and then a military obligation. But following that, I thought, well, this was a nice little business that I might try to see if I could build up. And so I went into the tug and barge business as Napton Towboat, and we had about 10 boats and one barge, and made money, and we mostly towed logs and barged a little bit of oil at that time. And then I enjoyed the business, and I didn't want to practice law, so I continued my working career with the tug and barge business.
Well, as a reformed lawyer myself, I can sympathize with the desire to do something else. Explain for listeners what the Napton connection is. Some people even here may not even know where Napton is, far less, you know, what your family connection is to it.
Napton was a town originally called Cementville because there was a limestone quarry over there, and then in the late 1800s, a sawmill was built, and Mr. Knapp was involved. And the mill didn't do very well, and then the Simpson family of Simpson Timber came in and operated the mill for many years. Napton is, if you go across the bridge in Astoria to Megler, then you turn right and go along the shore, and you'll come to an area beyond the quarantine station which has a lot of stub piling, and it's in the beginning of a bay, which is a part of that bay is called Bricks Bay because of the early logging days. Mm-hmm. Napton was a sawmill that my grandfather purchased in 1910, and when you purchased a sawmill in a remote area that had no access for transportation except sailing ships and tugboats, why, it was a self-contained town. So they owned the stores and the towns and facilities, schools, and all the boarding houses and food service, even a grocery store there. So that was a going town at the time, and many sailing ships came in and out with cargoes for all over the world of lumber that was cut and logged in this area.
Mm-hmm. I was interested also to see regarding Napton sawmill that a good amount of the I'm sure just luxuriously wonderful fir and other, I suppose, woods that were harvested there came across the river for use in shipbuilding in Astoria and elsewhere.
They did now and then, but the large use of the wood was spruce that came over for boxes for canned salmon, and then in the shipyard they were building some ships during the couple of years of the First World War for the government, and then that shipyard was Wilson Shipbuilding, which is out here on the entrance to Young's Bay, and they operated there for many years after the war, building small vessels like ferry boats and a few tugboats.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the glories of these books, as I mentioned, that they're very rich in terms of photography. Bev has done a wonderful job of assembling or helping you assemble. How many photos did you say you've scanned in so far?
Well, I think over the last 3 years, I've scanned close to about 5,000 photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And from those, we have several hundred in these books.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to think the best ones are in
right.
the book. But many are, what's kind of a treat, I think, is that many of these have not been seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Because Peter's grandfather, PJ, had the great vision to have people photograph his operations, and he took great care in saving those.
Mm-hmm.
And so Peter has carefully archived those, and I, had the great good fortune to be able to work with them and present them along with his story.
Well,
I think
they
the
really
unique
are incredible.
Part of his having photos taken, this was 1906, 1905, 1907.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he must have had a little idea that it was something unique.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Well, it came to mind just in regard to discussing Napton, especially, that there are some images in there that I certainly haven't seen before that make it apparent just what a huge enterprise it was. It would have been within easy sight of downtown Astoria and would have appeared to be a thriving small town across the river, just sort of to our northeast, I guess, from where we're sitting here at the Astorian.
Mm-hmm. They did have a mill here on the was subsequently the Astoria Plywood site, and now is developed for other things. The Clatsop Mill, I believe it was called, where they made the fish boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had some other logging operations near Astoria.
Mm-hmm.
But the focus was to supply logs for the Napton Mill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the photos in the logging book especially focus on the railroads that were associated with the logging activities of the Bricks family. really a lot of, you know, for a railroad nut like me, it's great to look at those wonderful old early locomotives and just a tremendous font, both the visual imagery, but also I think stories having to do with the incredible trestles that were built. It really takes the books in total take us back to a time when this area just had these wonderfully robust, thriving industries that I think people today can barely imagine. Mm-hmm. It must have really been something to be alive in those times.
Mm-hmm. We want to mention that our cooperation from several people who are fascinated with and hooked on the old railroad mm-hmm. equipment and operations, and they've been so helpful to us in furnishing information and furnishing photographs from as far away as California.
Mm-hmm.
And it has really been a pleasure to work with people that have that level of interest. We also have retained two different people who drew maps of the logging railroads that have never been really drawn accurately before, and they're in the book. And
mm-hmm.
for the historians like you,
right.
you will enjoy seeing where they were and how extensive they were, mm-hmm. including inclines.
Right, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, I've heard for years about old abandoned railroad tunnels out in the middle of the wilderness, and you know, it really strikes a chord in my imagination, as I know it does in many other people's, to think about those times of these huge tall trees and, you know, guys out there working hard for their families and mm-hmm. making a living. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing thing. So you've told me a little bit before we entered into this conversation that there is a third book in progress. It's more about your family history, which is really kind of only alluded to the early part of it, at least in mostly the logging book. But I think it's interesting, maybe for listeners' purposes, to talk about that at least a little bit, that your family immigrated from Germany and they weren't coming completely cold. They were sort of related to people who had homesteaded on Grays River, I gather.
That's mm-hmm. correct. An Andresen had come in 1869, around that time, to this area, and we don't know why. It must have been someone that he knew. And then his sister married Peter Frederick Brix in Germany, and because they were very poor and the political conditions weren't good in 1881, they came to the United States, but their destination was always Grays River because of her brother mm-hmm. who had homesteaded on Grays River. And they came in and homesteaded some land, and I think their idea was to live much the way they had in Germany, mm-hmm. where you'd raise hay and some livestock mm-hmm. and eat. But I think the generation, their children, Asmus, Albert, Anton, and P.J. Brix, kind of figured out that they could cut down trees and mm-hmm. sell them to the Napton Mill.
Right. I was interested to see something of a connection with another one of my— it's not a major obsession amongst my obsessions, but the old town site of Frankfurt has been something I've written about a little bit in the past, and your family has sort of an interesting connection with it, in that there was a good deal of logging in that area, and it sort of provided some seed money for expansion at a pivotal time, it sounds.
Mm-hmm. I think that, and Bev can correct me, but I think that Asmus and Albert, the two oldest boys, first started logging in the Frankfurt area mm-hmm. and had their camp and their oxen and got things going. And then it moved into a larger area and a much larger camp in the Sissonkrieg area, which is right at the mouth, flows into the mouth area of Deep River.
And it's interesting that back then, in the late 1800s, that was considered Frankfurt on the Columbia, you know, the gateway to the West. And it was supposed to be this mecca, you know, to rival, you know, San Francisco. And so there were a lot of land speculators and people buying up land thinking this was really where it was going to happen.
Right.
Nobody knows where Frankfurt is today.
No, it's
it's a great dream, though.
Yeah. Well, I've found that there are people who still have vacation homes or vacation sites, at least in that area, and are very, very attached to it and fond of it. Let me just reintroduce everybody again about halfway through our show, all too brief show. This is Matt Winters, After Deadline on KMUN, and I'm here this morning talking with Peter Bricks, who's written a couple of books that are available for purchase at the Columbia River Maritime Museum, and I presume other places as well, along with his collaborator, Beverly Warren Lee. And Peter, one of the, I'll switch to the maritime side here in just a moment, but I was going to say that one of the other interesting things I found about the logging ancestry was it was your grandfather, PJ, I believe, that I saw was greasing the skid road for the oxen, and it's just so, again, remarkable to think about how things change and how quickly that, you know, here not much more than a century ago, your grandfather was slathering logs in the hillside with stinky grease to ease the path of those giant logs down to the water.
Yeah.
Well, it was quite a story because he was 15 years old, and that was his first job in the forest products business. And then there's an excellent photo in the book of when he was about 20 years old. He was the bull whacker, which meant he kept the oxen pulling.
Yeah.
And I would say thank you for the credit about writing the story, but I wanted to mention that Brian Pintola of Nacelle did the writing for the logging book. Beverly and I reviewed it and made minor changes, but we think he did a wonderful job of portraying the old logging days.
Well, Brian is just a wonderful local historian and has done a great deal to preserve local history. He follows in his mentor, Carlton Aplow's footsteps in really treasuring these stories and this legacy that we're all so grateful and lucky to partake in. So switching to the maritime side, you sort of had a classic story there, too, in the sense of pretty much getting started on the ground floor and working your way up to CEO. And growing the company a great deal along the way. What are some of your earliest work-related recollections about working out on the water in these parts?
As I mentioned earlier, my dad passed away unexpectedly, and so I was still in law school, but I started working two summers on the tugs just to learn the business and make a little money. And being a deckhand on a tugboat that's towing logs mostly in the Portland area was my first exposure to the business. And of course, one of the humorous things is the old captains would like to bump the boomstick when I was walking on it and see how big the splash was when I went to the water.
Right.
But it was hard work, and we explain in some of the terms and some of the equipment that is used in the old log towing business, which used to be very large on the river. Then I was in the business, and I thought, you know, I kind of enjoy this. I wonder if I can make it grow some, and probably didn't know much about what I was doing, but then as we wanted to grow a little, we purchased Arrow Tug and Barge. I think the sale was closed in '62 from Jim Stacy here in Astoria. And that was kind of a tipping point for growing the business, because had we not done that, I think other companies would have purchased the business from Jim, and it would have been difficult for us to expand in this lower river area.
Got to jump for those opportunities when they present themselves sometimes. Huh?
And then following that, as we wanted more equipment, we started borrowing money and building more equipment, and it seemed like that was never ending and probably still going on.
Well, it's I know that along with, of course, the railroad nuts, that there are a lot of tugboat nuts around this area too. And what are some of the boats that people might remember, any that spring to mind as being just particularly signature vessels of your company?
Well, the first vessel was the R. Myler, and it was a 100 horsepower small steam vessel that had been built here in the Astoria area, mm-hmm. and then was working, had other ownership. Then the General Washington was a famous freight boat, mm-hmm. primarily, that operated on Deep River and was on a steamboat as well, and was unusual because it was a twin screw, two propellers. And the Melville was a famous old tug that operated both on the river and in the ocean. It was built by the Callender Navigation Company, which was the first acquisition that Napton Towboat made mm-hmm. in 1922.
Now, did I read that the Callenders were somewhat sort of shoestring relations to some extent, or?
They were not related to the Ricks family.
No.
They were related later through a marriage, I think, to the Flavelles.
Ah, that's what I'm remembering. Right.
But they did own the dock and so forth that we acquired when we acquired Arrow Tug and Barge mm-hmm. at the foot of 14th Street.
Mm. Now, do any of those old historical tugs still exist, or have they all gone away?
I think all of the wooden boats are gone. They were all wooden in those days. Our first steel boat of any significance, I believe, was in 1947 that we built, called the Myrtle. We had had other Myrtles that were wooden, but the steel boats really didn't come in and steel hulls very much until after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
We had one old vessel that had many names. It came from New Orleans, was built in 32 or 3, but that was, we didn't acquire it until the
pretty
60s.
Far along, yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of the developments on the river that pertain to maritime industries I thought would be interesting to talk to you about, at least in brief. I would say, you know, by way of introduction, that you eventually, or your company eventually, sold most of your local assets to the Foss Maritime Company, based now in Seattle, used to be Tacoma. They recently announced they're leaving the Columbia. What's the nature of the industry at this point? What are your views of how that decision came about, and, you know, where is it going? Is it still a good, healthy industry with the future, or?
It's an industry that's changed dramatically in the last 20 years through consolidation and the requirements of very large or much larger barges, much mm-hmm. larger horsepower, which have a financial constraint that is not something that everyone wants to take on.
Right.
I think Foss sold their grain barging that they purchased from us, the upriver barging, to Tidewater Barge Lines a few years ago. And I don't think, and they lost a lot of their oil barging in the Portland Harbor to competitors. And then I think they found that they were left docking ships and not much else that was related to the river, and it just wasn't practical to employ their capital and their people
mm-hmm.
for that small amount of business.
Right. Now, you remain, to some extent, pretty actively engaged in your industry, if I remember your books correctly.
Well, I am. I own half of Brusco Tug and Barge, which is we formed in 1985, mm-hmm. and we operate in Alaska, West Coast, Gulf Coast, and a little bit on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
mostly ocean operations. I don't think we're doing much of anything on the Columbia River, but we do have our maintenance facility at Kathlamet on the water, so we do some maintenance there. And then I have financial interests in a number of barges that are rented out to other people. And generally, I will have a half or a 25% interest
mm-hmm.
of those barges. So that keeps me in tune with the industry and something to worry about.
As I alluded to in my column on the subject of your books, it seems as if Brix Maritime really was a tremendous contributor to the economy of a lot of little places up and down the river. I hadn't known about the Kathlamet connection, but one of your former executives, the COO, I believe, what is his name? I don't recall.
Ed Beal.
Yes, Ed Beal spoke lovingly about the shipyard at Rainier as being just these mm-hmm. can-do, anything can be fixed guys.
Over the years, we purchased a lot of very small companies and some that were larger that were based on the river.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was Smith Tug and Barge of Rainier, Oregon. And they had a very efficient shipyard, ship repair facility there next to their moorage, and they had the best people I've ever seen for getting things accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great experience to work with those men.
Mm-hmm. There's a reference in your book to you sailing a boat, I think it was in the Sea of Cortez. A friend of yours was visiting you down on the Mexican Sea. It reminds me of that sort of Mexican can-do attitude that we'll keep this thing running no matter what, even if it has long since lived out its nine lives.
Yeah.
Well, I had a guest and his wife on the yacht that we were on, and mm-hmm. we went into a moorage, and there was no one there, and so we got off the boat and went into the town, small town, Loreto, Mexico, in the Sea of Cortez. And we came back from town after lunch, and the gendarmes were there.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave us a hard time, and I was very cordial and cooperative, and they finally left, but they were all carrying automatic rifles, so it made me want to be polite.
Does get your attention, doesn't it?
Yes.
I was coming back from a trip to Mexico many years ago and saw flashing lights in my rearview mirror, and some guys got out and came up to my window and said, we are the Federales. You have heard of us? Voice. I appreciate the Mexicans. But, you know, I appreciate so much your books, Peter and Bev. They're both wonderful additions to local history and your jobs and industry and creativity have been much appreciated here over the years.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about it. I enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, best of luck. Thanks. See you again soon after deadline. This is Matt Winters.